It's May 8th, 2008, and I'm here with Lanky Anoya and interviewing him about his experiences in the Royal Canadian Navy. I guess we can just start off your basic info, where we were born, and your birth date, and full name, biographical information.
First name is Yeiji, Y-E-I-J-I, and last name is Inoue, I-N-O-U-Y-E, and date of birth is 19th of Feb, 25.
Sounds good. And where were you born?
Born in North Arm, B.C., which is east of North Vancouver, and the Arm in there.
Right on.
And I'm registered in North Vancouver.
And where did you live when you were growing up then, Vancouver?
Well, no, not necessarily. No, from there, our dad was a logging, so he from there we moved over to Coquitlam, and then when dad was logging, so the whole family moved there. And then from there we had to start school. We had to come out of the bush. I went to Hammond, where my uncle was there. My cousins and uncles were Furukawa, so living there. So I stayed there for 2 years, and then we bought a place where the whole family could move into. So it was part of Hammond, but it's about another 4 or 5 miles away from where I was. And Dad was then transferred his work into the sawmill, Hammond Cedar Mill.
Okay.
Yeah, and then we went to Hammond Public School. And from there we moved away, not away from, but a little ways away to a place in Hammond where the Maple Ridge Hotel is now. And there was a small farmer we rented, so that mother and we could all work on it, and at the same time Dad was at the Hammond Cedar. Mm-hmm. And they were there for about 5 years and moved over in 39 to Haney, B.C., which is another about 10 miles from there east. And Dad changed job. He went up to State Falls, B.C., where there's a logging up there. And we stayed down in Haney by the CPR tracks. And then and from there, my mother went back to Japan to learn dress making.
Okay.
Yeah, and then we went, brother and I went to Hammond to my uncle's place, and sister went to a friend of theirs in Haney. And then from there on, 40, I guess, we moved into Vancouver, and then the war started in 41.
Mm-hmm. So, your father then and your mother were first generation?
Yep. Oh, yes.
And when did they come over?
Well, Dad came over in 1918, but then he went back and got married, so I was born in 25, so I guess about 1918... About 1923, they got married in Japan and came back over again.
And where did they originally come from in Japan?
Fukuoka.
Fukuoka?
Kyushu, on the Kyushu, yes.
And when you were growing up, then you mentioned high school. How did you mix well with in high school? You had a brother around the same age as you, or...?
Well, it was every Japanese and the white, they're all together, so it didn't matter.
Okay, right.
So there's no, you mentioned something about feeling between the Caucasian and us. Mm-hmm. To me, I didn't find any.
Right.
When I was growing up anyway.
Right. No animals.
And because I guess we were not actually involved with farming with the Japanese community, right, like most Japanese were. We were mostly in by ourselves to a certain part, and then even in Haney we were downtown,
right,
where the rest of them were on the farm. So all our friends were mostly Caucasians.
Gotcha. Yeah. So when you went to high school, then you went to high school in Haney?
No, I went to high school, started high school in Vancouver.
Okay.
Van Tech.
Right on.
In there. And there's no hard feeling. But one other thing I did was, even at that age, I used to play a lot of sports.
Yeah.
So I guess in sports, there's very little any feelings towards who you are as long as you play. Okay, I guess if you play lousy or something, they might pick on you. But other than that, you're fine as long as you play well enough to stay on the team.
And were you going to Japanese language school as well?
No. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I guess I went to 4 years. When I was around 15, I guess I stopped going again, because once you start getting a little more high school homework and whatnot, so
right. We
sort of packed it in after that.
Right.
So by the time I got to Vancouver, I wasn't going to Japanese school.
Right. So you would have to do that after school.
Oh yeah, definitely. Well, soon as the school was over, we all got on a bicycle or walked to the Japanese school.
Right.
And sat there for 2 hours.
Right.
That's every day.
Right.
Yeah. Along the school, then we went.
Pretty hard work.
Well, it was worth it because at least I learned something I never forgot.
Right, yeah. Came in useful later.
Mm.
And was your family involved in a Ken organization?
No, I talked to my sister on this. She said no.
Okay.
No.
And would you say you're part of a Japanese-Canadian community?
It's hard to say for me because I never actually, I knew them from school and judo and whatnot. But other than that, the only people I knew was Caucasian at the school, and that's what I used to play with. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, anyway.
In your youth, did you have, you must have chores around the house, did you have jobs as well when you were younger?
Well, I used to work at Berry Co-op every summer for 4 years, and that's it.
Right. Just in the summers?
Yeah, just in the summers, yeah.
Stock boy kind of thing?
Pardon?
Just stock and shelves kind of thing?
No, it's when the farmers bring in the berries,
right.
And it's a cooperative thing,
and
then we take it off the truck, put it in the fridge, and then when the time enough is there, we get a refrigerated freight car. We used to pack it in there, and then they'll either go to prairies or wherever it's supposed to be going. That's the way, in the summer, anyway, that's what I did in the summer.
So, coming into the Second World War years then, in the 30s, were you aware of events there, or were your family talking about, say, Japanese military expansion into Manchuria, China?
Well, I knew that they're going to. Well, yeah, parents talked about it, but that's it.
Right.
Nothing else, as far as I know, anyway.
Right. Do they follow Japanese language press or anything like that? Do you remember Japanese language newspapers around the home or anything like that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there were Japanese papers, yeah.
And do you remember in 1939 when Canada declared war? Do you remember that moment at all, or what your feelings were?
Oh, yeah, I remember that one, yeah. We didn't know if we were supposed to go back to school, or, we said, what the heck? I wonder if we should. So we went anyway.
Right.
Yeah. But actually, there was no bad feeling at that, as far as I was concerned. We took the streetcar, went to Van Tech, came home. But then soon after that, just the talk started about, evacuation and whatnot. So that's when things got, people started realizing what was going on.
Right.
So I had to quit school when I was in, soon after that I quit and went to work in a bowling alley.
Right.
Till I left for T-John up in Road Camp.
Right. I assume that the major event of that era was the bombing of Pearl Harbor, which changed a lot of perceptions towards Japanese Canadians, even.
Yeah, the parents are worried what to do and what is going to happen to us.
Right.
But then at that time, when it happened, you know, I started working at the bowling alley. We had nothing else to do, so that's where we went. We worked during the day, and night we stayed at the bowling alley. It couldn't be, there was a curfew on the street, so we couldn't stay on the street, so we had slept there. And during the day, we went, in the morning, we got up and went home. And then came back in the afternoon when the people started coming in. But at that time, we decided that Dad was sent to Tijang. There are the Issei's, you know, senior people went there. Must have been about 50 of them.
Right.
And then decided the mother and kid brother and kid sister will go to Greenwood, which is a old mining town. There are lots of hotels in mining towns, so that's where they went.
Right.
So I think it was around April, I went to Tijang.
Right.
By myself. And that's where I got involved in RCMP. I didn't know what the hell I was supposed to be doing. I was 16 or something, and I went up there. Then got to Tijang and stayed there with all the old people. And then there was one, two, three, four other younger, you know, Niseis were all up there. So it wasn't too bad when I got there.
And what were they doing up there in Tijang?
Just building roads. From Red Pass to McBride, Prince George, that road there.
Right.
Yeah.
And how was there security teams around, or was it pretty relaxed?
RCMP recruited civilians. Eh?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so they were not actually RCMP, they were just maybe a name alone, but they never wore uniform or anything.
Right.
They never carried guns as far as
you
know. So, want anything, won't talk to them, or, you know, so the security was relaxing. In that camp, anyway.
Right.
Because we used to go fishing when we wanted, and didn't ask.
Right.
You're taken off someplace, but,
it was pretty relaxed.
Yeah, we just went.
Right. And could you leave, or did anybody leave?
No.
No. Okay.
Out in the bush, you want to leave. You're a city person, I don't think we want to leave that place for the security. Yeah, it's pretty hard.
Right. Was it pretty hard labor?
No. I think any road camp, just go at your own speed.
Okay.
I don't know if this is the thing I'm supposed to say. I don't know.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's perfect. I think you're allowed. Yeah. Just backing up a little, when it was sometime before Pearl Harbor, I believe that all the Japanese Canadians had to register with the RCMP. Do you remember the RCMP coming to your door or anything like that? Or was it under that part of it?
No, I had to get my... so when I turned 16, I had to get the card for the RCMP.
And you had to carry the card on you at all?
Oh, yes, yeah. I had the card all the time with me when I turned 16.
Right.
That's the only thing I don't even remember getting called into. Just after registering. Now, I guess the parents must have did that because I don't recall.
No. So you were in Tijang then for a time, and then you ended up going back down to
Tijang. April, May, June, July, August, September. 5 months. Well, we left in September before the winter started coming.
Right.
Sit in because actually once the winter came in, the winter was pretty bad up around in the snow. So they start moving everybody out. So. Majority of us went to New Denver. That's when they were building a relocation camp for people that's coming out of Hastings Parks and different part of BC. And most of them are involved in building.
Right.
And we call it mushroom houses because that's how they were. You know.
Right.
Just slapped together.
So when you got there, they were in the process of building.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And did you get there at the same time as your mother? And
No. Mother and kid brother and kid sister were in Greenwood by this time. So when I left, soon after that, they were evacuated to Greenwood.
Right.
And from there, Dad and I went down to New Denver to help build a thing. But when we got there, we were all in army tents, big ones, young guys anyway, because they didn't have enough room at the curling rink in Ice Arena, and old barn in New Denver. Then we eventually, before the winter set in, we moved in there. And then by the time actual winter set in, Dad went back to Greenwood, mm-hmm. stayed with my mother, but I stayed, and I didn't want to go back, you see. So mm-hmm. I stayed with friends in a house there.
And were there communities kind of being set up within these camps where you would
It didn't take real long for people to get organized. Right. And they had a baseball team going. A big poker session. Well, nothing else to do at night because we weren't used to that kind of weather. Right. Snowed in and this and that, so... Yeah, well, there'd be a lot of poking, you know, right. Penny-ante stuff, but to get, you know, waste your time away, and it was easy social in those days, but in the summertime it was baseball, yeah, we got all organized, yeah.
Right. So, how long were you in New Denver then?
Let me see, year and a half? Because I think I left there in 43, I think. Mother and the kid brother and kids just that they wanted to get out to go to finish the school.
Right.
And they had to go to high school, so they said they want to leave before school started in Ontario. So in some way they got a permission to go to, or he got a job at Guelph, Ontario, called a place called Homewood, it's a mental hospital, right?
Right. So this would have been in 43 or something?
Yeah, that's there. Right, yeah, much in 43.
They ended up going out there and you...
Yeah, and then we stayed there about a year, I think around 44, we went to... Cedar Springs,
right.
To a farm so that we can call Dad out, you see.
Right.
So Dad stayed in Greenwood,
right.
Logging.
Right.
So we decided to move into Cedar Springs at a farm, a fruit farm, big one, orchard and everything. And then my dad came out to join us in Cedar Springs.
Right.
Yeah.
And how were you received by the locals in Ontario?
Well, I guess we were okay. I never had any... Because I played ball for about half the season in Guelph, with Junior A.
Right.
So, because they're short of ball players anyway, so I guess maybe that's why they took me with no problem. But no, I had no problem. And there was a lot of domestic Japanese girls who were there, mm-hmm. working domestically in the kitchen and the maids and whatnot at the hospital, you see.
Right, yeah.
Or institution, you want to call it.
So there was other Japanese Canadians out there already then?
Yeah, that's right, yeah, way before us, yeah.
Right. And did you have a job at the sanitarium? Or?
Yeah, doing a kitchen work, you know, cleaning up, like a busboy, you call it nowadays.
So then coming to the end of the war, do you remember hearing of the atomic bombings and what your reaction was there?
Yeah, I was in Brantford, Ontario then. See, from Cedar Spring, I went to Chatham to finish my high school in technical school, and then when I finished that, I went over to Bradford because I wanted to do something in the motor car end, so I went to body and fender course, apprenticing it. Well, it was in the winter time. Well, what a lousy job that was.
Oh, Jesus.
So after about 6 months, I quit. It was just, I was getting soaked underneath with snow and whatnot. So and Hugo Yamamoto, I guess you know him, eh? You heard of Hugo Yamamoto?
Yeah.
Tanaka's brother-in-law. But anyway, we were all living together, so we heard about the atomic bomb, this and that. And, yeah, we were wondering what the hell was going to happen to us, because when that happened, no, it was just celebration saying that war's over.
War's over completely.
So that was as far as we were concerned, too. So there's no hard feeling or anything. So,
After the war, then, did your family consider moving back to BC?
No.
You were well settled in Ontario?
The kids all have jobs.
And
we all stayed down there. I'm the only one that didn't have a permanent job.
And so you were living in Brantford there. I've got here that you ended up as a machinist apprentice.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. After Chatham, I finished the technical at high school, so I went and applied or got a job as an apprentice at garage in Brantford.
Right.
And from there I went to Toronto, Peterborough, this and that, and finally ending up in 47. Yeah, ending up in Kitchener, Ontario.
Right.
And that's where I got to join the Navy from there.
Now, you attempted to get into the RCMP before you tried.
That's right. That was, 46, yeah.
Right. And what was that process like?
Well, it was okay. There was no different than anybody else. Mm-hmm. Caucasians, eh? Mm-hmm. Examination, physical, the whole thing. It took about 6 months, but they got it all through. But as I was saying, because it was right after the war, the RCMP found out it's kind of leery of having myself, investigating someone. I have to go to your family, and your son just got shot down or something. And they said, "What the hell with you? I'm not talking to you." But then that was no benefit to RCMP because you can't get my job done. So that was one of the reasons that they gave me. And I said, "Okay, yeah, I understand." So I said, "I'm not going to argue." So I said, "Okay." Then they sent somebody, an inspector down to talk to me and all that. So that's fine.
Right.
So I left it at that. Mm-hmm. Till I went to Kitchener, Ontario in 47 to work in a kitchen or a restaurant there. And I met this fellow by the name of Alex McIntosh, and he was an ex-Navy. So one day he said, "Hey, I'm going down." He says, he didn't have a permanent job either. He said, "I'm going down to re-entry the Navy again." I said, "How about coming? When's your day out?" I told him. He said, "Okay, I was going down with me. Pick a bus." We went down. And I said, "Okay, I'll give it a try. I tried the RCMP. I said, I'll give it a try at this." But then I said, "I'm not going to go and ask for it. Just I'll see what happens." And while I was waiting in the waiting room when Alex went in, Chief says, "Hey, what are you doing here?" I said, "Well, a friend of mine just came down to re-enter the Navy, so..." He said, "You want to try?" "Yeah, okay."
Just like that.
So I thought, "Well, yeah, so I'll go through your, process, see what happens."
Right.
And I said, "Well, if I do get in," I said, "everybody tried the S-20, the Army, so I said, oh, this is a good idea. Maybe I'll be different, I'll try the Navy."
Right.
So that's why I got involved in it, and... first thing I know, 2 weeks later, I was okay to go in the Navy, and this friend of mine that was going to re-enter, he couldn't figure out what the hell's going on. He said, "Jesus, he said, you're going to be okay?" I said, I told him what happened. He said, "Be the RCMP." "Oh, okay." So I think I left there 23rd of November, BC, thank God, before the winter sat in anyway. And I came out to Squamish here.
Right.
At that time it was called HMCS Naden, the barracks anyway.
And what was your initial training like? You would have to do just the basic training?
Yep, everybody, same as everybody else. Yeah, run, 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 don't walk, run. Up the hill, and get out of line, and but anyway, we took that for six months, and finally got my, finished it, and went on Ontario as a sea training sailor. So we got trained on Ontario for 3 months. And then I was a East Coast number, you see, because I joined the Hamilton, they came to start, so mine was 107208.
Okay.
So I had to go to Halifax. From there, I got there around September, around October, mid-October. It's all in here anyway.
Right on.
Yeah, and then I went to Stadacona in Halifax, Nova Scotia.
Right.
So, pardon?
What trade were you?
At that time, I was sick bay.
Right.
Yeah. What do you call a medical staff?
Right.
Because I was working at Greenwood, they found that out. So they, oh, he's got some background in, because people didn't want to go in the medical field because it's kind of messy, and you know the hours are, you got to go in the evening, same as the nurses.
Right.
So anyway.
So what kind of training did you have for the medical side of things?
Well, same as nurses. You did whatever the nurses do at the civilian hospital, no different.
Right.
Yeah. So when you, it's to be a full-fledged sick bay or attendant or what do you want to call it, a medical assistant, it took about 4 years.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And you were on the East Coast then, working out of Halifax?
Yep, that's that corner, yeah.
And you got all the way up to your sick bay assistant?
I gave that up before I left here.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, because I couldn't play ball, you see.
Oh, okay.
So I said, well, I want to transfer to gunnery.
Right.
So that's why I got in, got out of sick bay and went into gunnery so that I had more time for sports.
Right, it was just a time issue. There's too much time in the sick bay. And
yeah, well, see, you got to do night work, you see.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, so practice in the afternoon where you just couldn't do it. So
right.
I didn't know. So I had a chance to request the transfer into gunnery. So that's what I did.
Right.
So when I got to Stadacona, I was gunnery already. See.
Right. And what kind of training did they do for the gunnery? Did they have like on land and sea kind of range practice?
Stadacona, Naden, they all had a gunnery school, big gunnery school for you know all the even torpedoes and etc.
Right.
And that's where you did your training. And the instructors right there, and they got to walk guns and everything, how to do all the different drills and whatnot.
Right.
So you got to go through all that. That was a 6 month course. Then you got to do a lot of parade work too.
Of course,
on top of that.
So you trained using a variety of different guns, then? I assume.
No, mine was mostly 4-inch, okay. 4-inch and above. Another cannon, say. And some people that do anti-aircraft, they went called AA. They took AA courses in that.
So it was quite specific.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. In those days, yeah, because you do different things, so you can't have too many people involved in different trade because you're never actually good at anything. So that's why the AA or 4-inch quarters rating.
Right.
You know, and then you had layers ratings and stuff like that.
Right. So when did you get assigned then to the Crusader?
Well, then I put in a trial, see, because I went through 49 and 50 winter.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you, it snowed this time. And we were in the barracks, and those days, you and the mess hall was maybe half a block away. You get up in the morning, look at the home. Slosh through that thing, and oh boy, I said, this is it.
Right.
So I was looking for somebody to trade the same trade, quarters rating, One at the East Coast, now one at the West Coast. He found one, and that's where I got transferred in 51.
Right.
I changed over, and he came over, so I went and came out the West.
Right.
And then I was in Naden for a few months, and then they put me on a Crusader.
Right.
In fact, I won a Crusader in 51. July 51 to July
53. Right.
Excuse me.
So then you were on the Crusader. Did what was it like with that ship before before Korea?
Well,
it was about a year before it.
So yeah, that's right. We did a lot of training, we were involved with the Princess when she came over. We picked her up in Vancouver, brought her over here, Victoria, and then we met her in Nanaimo, and then took her back to Vancouver. You see, so that was a bail.
Right.
That was a pain, I'll tell you. Royalty. But anyway. Then I ended up as a private escort, like it was you and I have to be there. He said, because, good bodyguard, you're a judo man. I go, oh, okay. So, I have a few pictures of that.
So you escorted her around, did you?
Yeah, well, wherever she went, I had to be nearby someplace, eh?
Right.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Well, here it is. That's me. Was that me? Is that one me or is that me? One of them, anyway.
Right.
The other one's Ray. You have to stand there and watch her.
So you're kind of following her around at all times.
Right? Yeah, well, and then, here it is. Here's myself.
Right.
There's a picture, and that's her. This is when we're going out so the people could see out of harbor,
right.
Or coming in out of harbor there.
Right. So when you went into your unit there, I guess there was a gun crew that you joined.
Yeah.
How was your reception into that unit?
Oh, it was good.
Right on. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what was your impression of your officer?
Well, they're okay.
Right.
Yeah. But at that time, it's yourself that you have to present. Like, I was kind of leery as giving too many orders because being a Japanese, you want to know what the reaction would be.
Right.
See, I was worried for my side.
Right.
I don't know about them, but I was worried for my side, you see, because I didn't want to get in a fight.
Right.
So you always wonder, should I, give a director or tell them to do this or what? Or they're going to say, hey, who the hell do you think you are? But then there'll be confrontation and then there'll be problems.
Right.
So I was always kind of leery of that.
Right.
But anyway, everything went well. I was a captain of A-Gun on the Crusader,
mm-hmm.
Went to Korea and all that. And we just put very well. We all got along.
So when did you learn about your deployment to Korea? Did you have a lot of time to prepare?
Nope. I got married in 51. And then 52, I knew we were going to Korea anyway.
Right.
All these years, at least over a year, we knew that we're, because then we start training.
Gotcha.
You know, like landing party, boarding parties. We all learned all that while we were training for it. So before we left.
So, what other types of Korea-specific training did you do? Landing parties, boarding parties.
Yeah, we did a lot of gunnery practice from here and then in Hawaii, the island that we shoot, target island that we shoot at. But it's mostly just training and a lot of watch keeping so that you get used to it, you see.
Yeah. Now, what did your family, how did your family react to the when they knew that you
were the only stipulation they said to me was that, you have to realize that you might be shooting at your uncle.
Oh,
because my brothers were in the Navy and my father's uncles or my brothers, they're in the army too. He said, they're both, a lot of them. She said, that's the only thing, but I wouldn't know anyway. I'd be too far away.
Right.
But anyway, that's the only stipulation, you know, that hopefully that, you know, I won't get involved with, but by that time the war was over anyway, so
right.
Shouldn't have, but anyway.
Right, yeah. And what about your wife? How did she feel about
going
overseas?
Yeah, no stay when you got married, that's it.
Right. All right, so when you sailed...
Yeah, so on, just outside, of, just before he... Yeah, Guam, on the way in 53, my son, the first son was born, eh? So by the time I got back, he was over a year old.
Ah, no way, yeah. So when you left Esquimalt for Korea, did you go direct there, or did you go through Hawaii? Or?
Oh, yeah, we went to Hawaii.
Hawaii first.
Yeah, and then from there to Yokosuka.
Right. And could you describe just a general shift of what a gunner's duties would be for any particular day?
Well, we all had our job to do when you live with everybody, you have to take turns as dishwasher and bring the food in, and then at the same time you have to make sure in the morning that it's your turn to clean the mess up, you see, and make sure the bunks are all done, and then you have your own work to do with your guns, make sure that it's cleaned up every day and this and that. And oh no, you just kept busy.
Right. And you said you were a captain of a gun?
Yep.
Yeah. And so what did you think of your crew then?
Oh yeah, well, I had a good crew.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very good crew. Because the crew itself is not just gunnery people. People that supply the stuff for people that looks after victuals and whatnot. They were, could be a cook too.
Right.
They come up and give you a hand humping this ammunition right. towards the gun, eh?
Right.
And there's only about five of us actually involved in the gun itself
right.
that do the firing and laying and whatnot.
Right. And now you would have how many crews to a gun? I mean, you would have to man it 24 hours, right?
Well, not necessarily. When we're away from the war zone, we never, you know, a conflict, we never stayed any length of time up there because they have their own job work to do. One of them could be a writer. You know, he's got to be down there working on a typewriter or could be a cook. So the people that's involved in there'd be one, two, three, four, five of us with the actual gun crew itself. The rest are all people that we recruit from different departments.
So now when you first got into the Far East, you went to Japan?
Yep, Yokosuka.
Right. And what was it like when you were there?
Well, it was an American base, naturally.
Right.
And that's the first time I ever hit Japan in my life. So naturally, all I know about Japan at that time was what I heard. My people talk about it, my mom and dad, and this and that, and how beautiful it was. When I went ashore, I was disappointed because it was after the war, so nothing was what I seemed to thought it was when I was told. Eh?
Right.
And then the first time I went to see my one of my cousins in Yokohama,
right.
And I got there. The only problem was that he's speaking Japanese to me or on the subway train. I understand, but I couldn't get my tongue around some of these. Well, I had a hell of a time. Oh, hell of a time. When I finally got around to it, yeah, I was really kind of disappointed where Japan was. Yeah, I thought it might be because I never thought it'd be devastated like that. But yeah, it was a big difference to what I thought it was.
There's a lot of destruction and poverty.
Yeah, there was nothing there.
Right.
Like when, you know, nothing was beautiful. And there are a lot of, being Americans and being there, you know, since the war. Well, they Americanized everything, the bars, and this
right.
and that.
Right. Now, getting into your actual patrols, I understand there's a difference between the West Coast patrols and the East Coast, the waters there on Korea. Can you describe the difference between the West Coast and the East Coast?
Well, most of your action is on the West Coast.
Right.
The East Coast was because of Japan there, so there wasn't too much. Most of your was in China, between China and Korea then. So that's where used to most of our patrols were.
Right.
No, not too much on the West East Coast.
Right. And so what would a typical patrol be?
Well, you don't do anything. You just go up and down the sea and then use the radar to pick up any boats. That's in a restricted water. We're not supposed to be there, you see. And sometimes, especially at night, there'd be kind of sneak stuff across down to south or north. Yeah. Risky business.
Yeah.
But we had to do it.
Did you intercept the launch?
One time we intercepted. We just got a word that there's a junk sailing south that just robbed South Korean payroll. So we were waiting, and then we intercepted. And I jumped on board. We didn't know what to expect.
Right.
Yeah.
You yourself jumped on board
the boarding party were all ready. Eh? Right. We all had submachine gun, everything was ready, just in case.
Right.
But you never know, because just prior to those days, the American used to do the same patrol, whatnot, eh? And the gooks used to carry the grenade in here or between the crotch, eh? And just to put your hands up and then boom, you get blown over. Oh yeah, we just played the holy smokes. What the hell are we getting in?
But doing the boarding party was something that you trained for, and
Yeah, I was trying to pick up what the heck they're doing.
Right.
The only problem was that we used to change code. The United Nations force used to change the code every day. The buggers already knew our code. Amazing. It's amazing. It's supposed to be secret. They know your code already. So we knew that it was, you know, North Korea or in the South Korean army or headquarters someplace, and they couldn't tell who the hell they were anyway.
Right.
The North Koreans, far as I was concerned. I couldn't tell the North or the South.
And did your language skills come in handy with...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, by that time I wasn't bad, because I got used to talking, so I used to interrogate these people we'd pick up, bring them up there and talk to the captain and see what the hell they're doing there. Trying to find out how they found out our code for the day.
Right.
That you couldn't take that.
So, I understand the Crusader ended up towing one of these junks.
That's the one that had that picked up, the one with the payroll.
Payroll, right.
Yeah, but we had to get out of it because we're getting too close to shore on the restricted waters.
Right.
So we have to get out, and to get out, we have to tow this with us. And we hooked onto it, and that took off. Well, the boat started to break up. Oh, yeah, it was so much kayak from the crew that was down there. My God, it was terrible.
Yeah.
But anyway, we got to give it to him. We give him some lines to tie up the broken pieces together so he keep going. But we never imprisoned them or anything. We just told the South Korean that, you know, we intercepted and we got the money, and you know, we're going to let them go. We can't be, you know, pulling those things around. So, okay, so whatever it is, we don't know.
Now, I also understand you would have been a typical patrol would have been to do a carrier screen.
Carrier screening. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. We did that quite a bit.
Right.
Yeah.
So these would be the big American carriers.
Yeah.
British. Yep. Any British carriers?
Is there a British carrier? Yeah, I don't think so. They're all UN.
Right.
Yeah, that was something. Destroyer looks like a little robot compared to big shit aircraft carriers.
And would they have? Would it be several destroyers in the?
They're all protected. The aircraft carrier must be about six or seven of us all. And usually we get the tail end, the worst part, when somebody happens, we gotta go and pick them up like it. They move. Oh, we gotta go full speed to these aircraft carriers. When they land and take off, they go in the wind and they take off. Well, we used to fuel every 2 days when we had to do that. Oh, and they go for hours, eh? And they're full blast. Ooh, and then everything, we couldn't stand the upper deck. Everybody take off. It was something else, that thing.
Did you see a lot of the air traffic around those times? Did you see the MiGs or anything like that? Or?
Well, if they did, we certainly didn't see it,
right?
Mm-hmm.
No. And for you mentioned refueling, did you have to go back to Japan every time?
No. There'd be a Royal Navy tanker there. There are lots of American tankers. And if you want it, you can get us off the aircraft carrier, but we never did. But I've seen some of the big destroyers are getting it from them, too. Yeah, so...
I understand the Crusader also was in support of a minesweeper.
The North Koreans used to come along through all these mines, floating mines. So, when they're drifting, you don't even know until you pick it up on a radar. It's not always the case that you can pick it up because when it goes down, you miss it, you see. Then we really have to be on the lookout. Right. Everybody's watching for it. Right. You can't help it. And then all of a sudden you see it, there it is, and that's when AA mistakes. Go and kill it.
Right.
Blow it up. So that's what you should do. But that was because we didn't know. At nighttime, you can't even see it. The only thing that'll pick you up was a radar.
Do you see many mines?
Oh, yeah. We blew four at one time on patrol.
Right.
Yeah. They bring it out, people tell you, the United Nations forces will tell you because they've already got information that North Koreans, dump some mines. So be careful. So then we all keep, approximately where it is, you see. So we keep an eye on it. And sure enough, there it is.
Now, in August '52, I guess the Crusader gave fire support to these guerrillas on Mahap To Island. Do you remember giving fire support to any...
Jeez, I don't remember those. No? I know we give support, right. But there's... what specific, we don't remember. I don't anyway, because we would just have to close up the gun and, do what we're told, so.
Do you remember firing the gun onto the land on the west coast? Did you have to do that
all these train things and everything like that we did. You want coffee, too? Or tea?
I don't want coffee, yeah. Tummy. Was there any problems with seaweed on the West Coast?
Do you
remember? I heard that there was a problem with the seaweed getting into the intake with the Crusader.
Yeah, that was the most big, what the heck kind of, jelly, what is that marked here? Man of war. You know how big those things are? Oh, they're huge. And the tail must be way out here to the road. Oh, there. And they sting you, boy, I'll tell you. Yeah, it's real. Those are the ones that we used to, once in a while, just sucked in because they're just floating around in the water there. And we saw them. They're huge. I never seen like it. Man of War, I think that's what they call it.
right? Yeah, I think so. Huge jellyfish.
Yep. Oh, they're huge. Oh, God, they're huge. I've never seen anything like it. Oh.
There was a memorial service for some of the RCN guys on the
Iroquois. That's right.
And the Crusader transferred their bodies, I believe.
Too. Yeah, it was on the Iroquois. It happened on the Iroquois.
Right, yeah.
Well, to me, it's old man's fault. He should have never got in that close. They knew the gun emplacement was there. We knew. They knew, too, because we fire on it. Or they fire on us. We told them. But anyway, he got a little too close, and those guys waited. When the ship started to turn to go back out, and then they opened fire. And as soon as they did that, the bullet came in through the hole where the A gun was, mm-hmm. and hit the people right behind it.
Right, so it was gunners that.
Yeah, one of them was an athlete. He got his leg blown off. He was asked to be shot right there. But anyway, so we were time for us to go in to harbor. For R&R for about 2 weeks, so we were asked to apply. We went all went up to Tokyo, the Commonwealth. That's where they're buried.
Cemetery.
Yeah.
There's a big memorial.
Big Commonwealth cemetery up there.
So the harbors that you were docking at in Japan, is it Sasebo?
Yep.
Yeah. What do you remember about it?
Well, it was run by an American.
Right.
So it's a typical American naval base. Right. And we are alongside, and we just go alongside and try to get ashore as much as possible, because it's only one on three, so every third day you can go.
Right. And what did you do when you were on shore?
Booze. Because you never know what happens the next day when you go out. Yeah, the army always used to say, Jesus, you guys drink. Yeah, I said, you guys are sure all the time. You can go anytime you want to drink, but we can't.
Yeah.
You know, we're here for 2 weeks and we're gone, man, and for 5 weeks. I said, we never know what the hell's going to happen. So we just give her hell.
So there would have been a lot of American servicemen around. Was there any conflict between the different nationality groups or anything like that? Any bar fights or anything rowdy like that?
Well, we didn't like the Americans. The Americans didn't like us. So he used to always say, you know, they don't know the difference. Most Americans don't know the difference between the Canadian guy and the British guy. So they'll call you, you know, chipper, and hey, this and that, and then start mimicking on it. And we tell them we're not. We're Canadian. Well, they don't know who the hell we are. Especially guys from Texas, they haven't got a clue. But we did have a HMS Bird, which is a supply ship that was tied up there, too. And that was our liaison between everything else, to the British. And we had a Canadian officer on board, too. But it was always tied up, never went anybody.
Did you get to play any ball or anything like that in Japan, or any sports? Or?
No, just I had a chance to go ashore, and I tried to judo as much as I can at that time. Getting back to the Americans, they didn't like blacks, that was terrible. Well, those guys all sit in a group over there, and the Canadians, they don't give two hoots, just come on. And they'll come over and say, what are you guys talking to the blacks for? Right away, you're none of your damn business. We get in a fight. That was, Americans are really, I don't know. And they only had their job, and the blacks only had certain kind of jobs. And that's it.
Right. Did the Americans react to you as a
judo? We used to have fights.
So your judo came in handy?
Yeah, because... Well, no, not that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. A couple of times, I guess. Yeah, Shortbridge was off. Yeah, that, it's unfortunate, you know. They all sailed on the same ship, and yet there's a big wall right between those guys. I felt sorry for them. We all felt sorry for them. We used to invite them over. We didn't give two hoots.
And Curé Harbor, or Curé Harbor? Did you
that was run by the Aussies.
Aussies, okay. So yeah. A different atmosphere in the harbor then?
Oh, yeah, yeah. They like drinking, eh?
Right.
Aussies like
drinking. Some more of that there.
Yeah, there was more, but, and the British too. But the only problem with Curé was that it wasn't controlled. The girls weren't controlled. Because they didn't have the money, the British or the Australians, eh?
Right.
But in Sasebo, it was controlled.
Right.
You know, if you got any disease, you're out of there.
Right.
Gone, just like that bank. But a Korean there, no, it just, they don't know what the hell to do with them. They just, it was, we were always warned to be careful. Right. That was the only difference as far as the port goes. And the personnel, you know, obviously different thing. And then there was that camp there. What's that Japanese army guys all signed up and joined in there? And Curé? What the heck is that camp? That's where they deployed from there, going to Korea and came back. And was like, oh, damn. Oh, man, I remember that camp now. Yeah, the guys all went to the army in Japan. That's where he joined up at. Offhand, don't remember it.
Yeah. Now, getting back to your duties at sea, on the East Coast, I understand there was some support of a commando raid. Do you remember anything of that?
I don't.
No?
No.
No, landing ships or support of landing ships. And the main thing for the Crusader, I guess, and the gunnery was the train busters club, right?
Oh, yeah.
So
that was fun, man.
Yeah. So did you fire your gun? Was it the A gun that was being used?
No. All the big guns were firing. One is the X gun, which is at the back,
right,
or the stern,
right,
and then one B dick, which is above us,
right,
and the same here and there.
Right.
Yeah, we fired so many rounds on train busting that one night that the guns were just so hot,
yeah. The
grease just was melting, right, running like water off the guns.
Right.
Couldn't believe it. Hot. Oh, that barrel was so hot.
So, do you remember of the specifics of train busting and all?
Well, we get an order saying now go to a certain section of the thing, and that we know that information. We know that there's supply train coming down because they're carrying certain stuff that's got to be stopped. So we just cruise around nighttime, wandering around, and you pick it up, and then we blast away at it. So what we try to do, because there's so many tunnels, that we try to catch in between the tunnels. Otherwise, usually you can just go all you want, and nothing happens to the tunnel, you see. So they come on, we try to stop it from getting into the tunnel. Once they get in the tunnel, they won't move till you're gone. Then they'll start going out again. But anyway, what we noticed that even if you stop the train, if they can't, what they do is they got so many people that they'll get a chain of people to put it in, you know, go around it, and then keep pushing it to the tunnel.
Right.
And then load the thing in, and then they take off to the next one, you see.
So could you see the individual
people? Well, yeah, we could see the guys running back and forth, you know, oh, for God's sake, see. Yeah, human chain. That's right. How many people there are that they were using.
Right.
You can't get through? Okay, we'll get them through. Amazing.
So were you, so your gun, your particular gun was firing, or it wasn't firing at the at trains, or
we were all firing.
Right.
Yeah.
Everybody was happy. What's it like to be on a boat like that with everything going off at the same time?
Pardon?
It must be pretty intense to have all the.
Everything is pointing that way, and everything is all covered, and you just didn't.
Were you operating at long range for your gun?
The only way you can elevate it long or short range is just elevating your gun.
Right.
That's all. So,
right.
You don't want to get too close because there's some shore batteries there. You start firing at you, and probably they've got a bigger one than we have. Good thing, be like Iroquois, get blown out, you get a few people killed. So, right. Oh no.
Was anything firing at you with the gun? Did you, the Crusader receive
any fire? No, we never even got fired once. Son of a gun.
Good fortune.
Yeah. You want to go bathroom?
No. So, getting back to Japan, were you present for the Coronation Day celebrations there?
Yeah, we were in Sasebo at the time, but I was trying to think of the name of the ship, HMS, I forgot. I'm trying to think what ship we were, had a ceremony on, and then we all have to go.
Right.
So we all got ferried over there, went on board, and came back on the ship. The celebration was there for us.
Right. Was it pretty formal?
The British running in?
Right. For Christmas in Japan.
Yeah. Oh, this way?
No, just on.
You spent the Christmas of 53, I believe.
That's right, yeah.
In Japan itself. Yeah. And what were your celebrations like there? I assume everyone was missing their families back home.
Well, we all got care packages from home.
Okay.
My wife sent me a bottle of Johnny Walker.
Right.
Now they send you to get a big loaf of bread.
Yeah.
Take the inside out, put it in, tape a few on there, put it in a box, nail the small nails into it, and then send it.
Right.
So
that way
nobody's
going to take it on the way, right?
Pardon?
That way it's going to get to you?
Because it was a care package, so there's no post office or anything, eh?
Right.
So it came to the way. And then, we had turkey and everything, same as any place else.
Right.
And after our dinner was over, we were in Curie.
Right.
So we once invited some of the Australian to come down for dinner.
Right.
So it was very nice. And then we went out after for the evening. And
right.
So dinner was dinner, turkey dinner.
I know. That's pretty much the questions I have for your career tour. Do you have any memories or anecdotes that you'd like to share in excess of what we've gone over?
No.
So when you came back then from Korea, you had a son.
Yep.
Then waiting for you.
Yep, Jeffrey. Yeah, he was June. Came back in July. Yeah, he was 13 months.
Right. Yeah. Right. So he must have been pretty excited to.
He didn't know who the hell I was.
First time. Just another sailor off the boat, right?
Yeah.
What was that like coming back into a slime hole?
I used to get pictures of who he was, but this and that. I wanted to see, my own son because I've never seen him before except on the pictures.
Right.
And to see how things were, because then I at that time I decided I'm going to get out because this way I wasn't going to be home and I wanted to be home with the kids and whatnot.
Right.
So.
Right.
That's why I got out in 53.
Right.
We went back to London, and November, December, January, February, I rejoined re-entered the Navy again, because in those days, a job was hard to come by.
Right.
ski in London, Ontario, and especially in the winter time. I had a job, but this isn't right. And actually, right away they said, "Okay, right, where you go?"
Right.
Signed up and came out again.
Right.
And then I was in Maine for a while, and they asked me, and then I dropped it to Seoul, went back again to Korea to sort of, you know, pick up what was left that we had to finish.
This was after the armistice.
Mm-hmm. So most of the time we are 50% in harbor and 50 patrolling here and there.
Was it a lot less intense than your Crusader tour?
Oh, yeah. This was really relaxed tour, yeah. Then I did more judo, you see.
Right.
More time to do judo because it wasn't as tense.
Spent more time in Japan.
Yeah, that's right.
So then after you were assigned to the Sioux then, and how long were you with the Sioux? How long were you crew on the Sioux?
On the Sioux. 54 to November 56.
Right. And what was it like when you came back from Korea? Were you in based out of the Swamel?
Yeah.
In Naden, and this is the era when you opened up the Victoria Judo Club, I understand.
Yeah, 57. Yeah, that's right. A bunch of the it all started with Jimmy Ramsey, who was a policeman from Scotland. He took judo there, and he wanted to start a judo, practice judo. And it was someone he found out I just came back from Japan and got promoted to black belt, so they looked me up and. In August, we start training in Naden.
Right.
Yeah, in October that year, because judo wasn't recognized in the armed forces in the Navy anyway. If you got injured, it was too bad. So the boxing and wrestling were. So naturally, the wrestling wanted more time to train at the gym. So the spot we had, they wanted it. So we had to get out. So we said, what the hell? We're going to go on our own because... four of them were civilian. You see, I was only Navy, so we all got out, started in Queen Street downtown. Yeah, I sure like to stay in the Navy because they have the facility. Now, you know, we got a facility, but it's small.
So then, where did your career go from? Where did your career go then from there? In the late 50s and the early 60s, you were still with the Navy. What were you doing?
Well, when I was 56, 57, didn't do a hell of a lot, just being at the Navy. Yeah.
So it was in...
I went on a wrist of goose in 61. For 4 years, I didn't do much sailing at all.
And then it was 64 that you were asked to go as an attaché.
63 when I was on Cape Breton. And he says, so, would you like to go? I said, oh, yeah.
Right.
You know, so because they knew I spoke Japanese, not good, but enough to get by. So then, for all of 63, I had to learn some biscuits. How about you, biscuits?
I'm okay for that.
But anyway, so they said, okay, I'll go. But this is what you have to do. So I was a gunner, so I didn't have a clue how to punch a typewriter, let alone how to be an empress accountant. So anyway, so I went to Sprott Shaw downtown here and got my word up to typing up to 40 words a minute. That's what my lowest minimum standard was. Anyway, and then just before I left for Japan or Tokyo, I had to go to Ottawa and get screened, and you know how to do this and that, security and interest fund and all that. So I was in 3 months in Ottawa learning all this secret stuff, this and that, and to be clear, top secret, you see, being gonna. So in June we left with President Wilson from San Francisco to Tokyo. Boy, I wouldn't want to go through taking those courses again.
No, no. So what are your duties like in Tokyo then?
Well, it's an administrative course. That's why a position. That's why it was really tough for me. Oh, gee, I had an awful time trying to learn the system of filing and this, and you're not used to. But anyway, the guy that was before me was a sergeant, and he was from a clerk, like an army clerk, you see, so that's his job.
Right.
So I come in there, and I thought, oh, my God, had a hell of a time with that first year. But anyway, got through that one. Then 2 more years, and another captain came over and took it over. So if he's not there, I have to do assessment, like give you know, answers and whatnot, and do all the reports. But in the meantime, one good thing about was that we had a house, the wife and 2 kids, and they went to private school in Japan, a Catholic school. And naturally I took judo with me every day after work, after make-up judo, which was Kodokan. And during the day, work Saturday and Sunday off. Then I was there when they changed the flag to Maple Leaf.
Right, yeah, the ceremony. Yeah.
Yep. Oh, yeah, that was a big ceremony, my gosh.
Right on. So you enjoyed your time in Japan then, it sounds like?
Yeah, 3 years is long enough, though.
Was it? Yeah.
Yeah, because you start losing the idea you're a Canadian.
Right.
You know, life gets, because especially for men in those days.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're number one. Never mind the women. The women stay at home.
Different culture.
That's right. Yeah. So it's getting so that they did everything for you. And you go to a bar, you don't do that. You sit there and they pour everything for you. And even feed you if you want, I guess. But it was a different culture. But you get spoiled and it's about time the wife left there too, because she was in a different role altogether from here, you see.
Right.
The kids enjoyed it, because they were 2 boys, eh?
Right.
But, so, 3 years is long enough, as far as I'm concerned. Anybody stay long enough, they get too used to their living.
Right.
And I know I got three or four that right now, they've been there for 20, 30 years, and they just can't come back.
Right. Completely
that's
cultured.
Right. Yeah. And the money. See, they just, and the position they get there, or they just won't leave.
Yeah. So, after you came back from the embassy there, how long you were in Esquimalt again?
Oh, yeah, back to the base, yeah.
And did you have a different role after you had taken all these administrative
courses? No. Right back to my training. Well, then by that time I was a bosun, you see.
Right.
You gave up Gunny and went to the bosun, which is looking after the ship itself.
Right.
Like, I had chief bosun's mate, run the ship under the second in command, like you did all the administrative and this and that.
And then it was in the 70s at some point when you eventually did retire?
Yeah, 74. August 74. 5th of August 74, I retired. Right. Yeah, that was it, the last day in the Navy.
That was your 25 years?
25 and a half.
25 and a half, right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's long enough, too, I think. Because, in the 70s, the whole system started, well, not system, but society started changing.
Oh, I tell you, I was really shocked when it started changing so fast.
The society within the Navy?
Even within the Navy, and outside was changing pretty fast too.
Right. How would you describe the change?
Well, the respect and discipline, they gradually start disappearing. I mean, when I was there, one of the POs gave one of the recruits, you know, we used to give them, in one certain term, we used to tell them, you know, how bad they were, this and that. Well, he wrote his mother, and mother wrote their member of parliament, and the member of parliament got a hold of the defense staff got all the old man on the ship. The people got called up. I said, what are you going up there for anyway? He said, I don't know. I just got called into the top of the old man. What? So what happened was that the mother wrote and told him that he can't talk to my son like that. Oh, I said, oh, and then the society started changing that way, eh? I mean, one of the things, it's our fault too. The teachers going with no different than high school kids dressed up. University, some of them professor coming like you. There's no, where's the respect? You know? In judo, they say when you're a referee, you dress up with a tie and a jacket. You know, you don't just go and referee like we're supposed to, like ordinary guy. You gotta have some kind of a line. Eh? And now they're so bad that you remember a student telling instructor by calling by first name, I put no reference. And where's one of my instructors? Everything is just gone. You can't, and now you're trying to put it back, you can't do it. Too late. I mean, a lot of people are smart nowadays, better than what we were, but they're losing that on the side, which is more important in life than having a, you know, PhD in this and that, and then your kid grows up and is telling you to go fly a kite.
I think that comes to just about the end of our interview. Is there anything else that you think we missed that might be interesting to someone looking at this case?
No. Well, my personal feeling of enjoying the service was I have no regrets. I mean, I enjoyed the life, and I think I'll do it again, you know, if I had a chance. People were nice to me. Mind you, there are lots of incidents where I did run into problems. I remember one time in Halifax, this P.O., he got a downtown house, sentry at the cells, and this P.O. comes in, there's about half a dozen of them. They got picked up at the dance hall downtown and came in. And got thrown in. Well, what they do, first thing they do is strip me. They strip me right down and put them in a cold shower. Oh, yeah. Throw them in a cold shower and give it to slover them up. And then they put them in a white duck, say. So anyway, I remember this P.O. come out here. You so-and-so, you can't talk to me. You can't do this. So I just went, whoa! I remember him hit the wall, and it's in those days is galvanized steel shower, say, inside. Hit it, and he goes, just like in the movie.
Swapped down the wall.
Now after that, next day he was sobered up. He said, I don't want him around me. Oh, I don't want him around. I don't want to see him. It was so funny. Oh. Yeah, that was in another incident when I was a new entry. There, one guy come in. You see, the only time they do is when they're drunk, eh? I remember coming in, and in new entry training, the guy started lipping off who I was and this and that. And I'm not going to cork him across the barrack. And that was it. But I feel sorry for him because I smashed his jaw twice. I had to go to Vancouver to Shaughnessy Hospital. He never reported that what happened. He said he just fell. Yeah, that's, those are the few that I had.
But they knew that I knew judo, so they sort of kept away from me.
Right.
They didn't say too much. And I had a pretty hot temper, too.
Sounds like you weren't the guy to mess with.
Well, you have to fight for yourself in those days. So.
I think we can call that an interview then. That's right. I think we got some good stuff on it. You know, I, how long have you spent 5 years?